SohoRadioLondon.com.
Welcome to Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio. It's February. We've nearly made it. We've nearly smashed winter and we're nearly coming to spring. There are daffodils. I'm looking out of the window right now and I can see Soho, a buzz of spring joy and hope. It's me, Selena Godden, here in the studio with...
Amarose Abrams, and we are so thrilled because we have a rare appearance... Two rare appearances. We have Tuku Barbaros, who's joined us as our special guest.
Yeah.
And listeners, we actually have Matt Abbott live in the studio.
Hello.
He's here in the flesh.
I set off walking for the November show. It took me a while.
Okay, let's kick off this show how we mean to go on. Let's have some revolution.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, run. But a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution.
I have my sentence now, at last I know just how you felt. I dig my fingers in, expecting more than just the skin.
Like he held her, and now fuck you.
Welcome back. We've now got, for your auditory delights, Matt Abbott live in the studio with his poetry roundup. You can only get it here, guys. You can only get it here.
It's the only one place, one stop shop.
There is a piece of top secret information in there as well that's not on the interweb.
Ooh.
So that makes it even more exciting. I feel like I should stand up, but I won't.
No, don't do that.
10 gigs and 5 books. Feel free to chip in where you like. Okay, so the 4th of March in Brighton, Poetry Nights. They've got a poetry night and they've called it Poetry Nights.
That's what it says.
It's a series of poetry nights called Poetry Nights. Fair
clear,
enough.
Clear.
At the Dome. It's hosted by A. Flo, the poet. And it,
excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's good.
Yeah, like, she's amazing.
Yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah. And she's got Jenny Folds and Akila Richards.
Perfect.
Ticket start at £7.50. So check that out. That's the 4th of March. 5th of March in Bristol, right at the other end, it's Poetry Against Patriarchy.
Nice.
As part of a week's worth of activities for International Women's Day. It's at Strange Brew. It's Pay As You Feel. And it's Jasmine Gardosi.
Ah.
Plus support. Cat Lions is hosting it, and it's produced by Raise the Bar.
Oh, that's going to be gorgeous. Yeah, that's a good one.
Poetry Against Patriarchy. You can't argue with that. It's good.
It is overtly political.
It is overtly political, so enter at your own risk, reputational risk. Also on the 5th of March, if you're nowhere near Bristol but you are near Leeds, go along to Waterstones. It's an evening with Andrew McMillan and Malaika Booker.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
Nice. In conversation,
that's going to be really good. Andrew McMillan's book, Pity, is just out now. It's fantastic. It's really good.
I think they're going to be kind of predominantly talking about the novel, but they are two poets.
Yeah.
So I think it counts, doesn't
it? Yeah, no, and Malaika's amazing, obviously. So that's going to be a beautiful night.
Good. That's in Leeds on the 5th of March. On the 8th of March in Leicester, it's an International Women's Day event with Jess Green. So Jess is running workshops during the day. It's at the library. She's running workshops during the day, and then in the evening, she's going to do a performance from her new book, Dressed as Love. And then workshop participants are going to come and perform some of the work that they've written as well. And it's free.
Oh, wow.
Sounds like a really dreamy day, doesn't it?
Yeah,
sounds
doesn't good. It?
I know, yeah. And then the 14th of March in Manchester is Livewire, which is one of my events.
Yay!
It's at the Edge Theatre and Arts Centre. We have Momtaza Mehri, Jess Green and Casey Bailey. And tickets are £15 or £13 concession. And it's concession by conscience, so you don't have to prove anything, which I think is a nice way to do it.
Yeah, that's really good.
Really nice.
That's 14th of March. 16th of March in Deptford, there is an event called Queer Poetry Night. At the Triangle LGBTQ Plus Cultural Centre. That's also free, and it features Caroline Bird, Dean Atter and S.L. Grange.
Wow, that's a good line, huh?
I know, yeah. And it's free.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Queer Poetry Night, 16th of March.
That's going to be amazing.
19th of March in Holloway, there's an event called Poetry Club, which is quite well known. I think it's one of the better-known nights in London. It's at the Coronet Theatre. And this time around, it's David Harsent and Kit Fan. Who is great.
Kit Fan.
Kit Fan's great, yeah.
Kit Fan's amazing.
You have to come down. It's like my local...
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
the Coronet Theatre. It's a really well-regarded night.
We should go. Yeah.
Good. See, I'm glad that this is in real time getting some approval. That's good. On the 20th of March in Shoreditch, Jordance Rich Mix, it's Pay As You Feel. This hasn't been announced yet. It's not anywhere on the internet, but the acts are Courtney Conrad and Maria Ferguson with Kat Francois hosting.
Oh, nice.
Top secret information.
That's top
I shouldn't
secret.
Even be sharing it, I don't think, but I am doing.
It's an exclusive.
I know, yeah. 22nd of March up in Wood Green, Poetry and Poppadoms at a vegan restaurant called Caramel. It's a vegan Indian restaurant. Kat Francois is headlining that one with Sky Radford and Arthur Osofsky, and it's hosted by Paul Lyles.
That's a classic gig, actually. I've done that a few times.
It's nice,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one. Tickets are a tenner if you fancy going to that. And then finally, on the 28th of March, at the South Bank Centre, Outspoken Live, Nikki Giovanni, Mary Jean Chan and Hannah Lavery.
What a lineup.
Hosted by Joelle Taylor, of course.
Oh my goodness, that's going to be amazing.
£12 a ticket. Yeah. I tried to do more of a geographical spread, but there were so many good events in London, I couldn't not.
There's some lovely shows there. Get yourself out to see some poetry.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so some poetry collections that are upcoming. Up first, I want to mention Caterpillar Soup by Lorna Rose on Verve. That is coming out on the 14th of March, which is sooner than you think. It's less than 3 weeks, that. 14th of March. A potent mix of candid confession, self-deprecating humour and aching vulnerability, Lorna Rose's debut collection is 20 years in the making. In it, she explores coming of age to the devil's best tunes, the tangled mess of grief, the game-changing release of a long-overdue sexual awakening, and the freedom that comes with finally speaking your truth, finding calm in the storm through grooming horses, self-acceptance through a kiss with a stranger, and oneness with the cosmos on a wild swim. These poems tap into the transformative power of desire, trauma and spiritual connection. So that's Caterpillar Soup by Lorna Rhodes on Verve Poetry Press. And up next, I don't know how to pronounce this title because it's square bracket, dot, 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 closed square bracket. So it's like an ellipsis in squared brackets. It's by Fadi Judah on Outspoken Press, and it is responding to the unspeakable in real time. Fadi Judah offers multiple ways of seeing the world through a Palestinian lens. So Fadi is the author of six other collections of poems. He is one of the best-known poets in the Arabic world. He's a co-editor and founder of the Et al. Adnan Poetry Prize. He's a really renowned poet. He lives in Houston with his wife and kids, and he has written this collection that is like documenting what is happening in Palestine right now.
I've seen some clips of it and little pieces of it on the Outspoken Instagram. It's fantastic, actually.
It does look remarkable.
Really powerful.
So that's out on Outspoken on the 21st of March. Ghost Lives, Cursed Edition by Alex Maisie is out on Bad Betty on the 28th of March. Alex Maisie's playful text art sequence follows Ghost through a hyper-real metropolis beset with neoliberal temptation and eschatological peril. Woven between the visuals and virtuistic lyric poems, poignant, philosophical and irreverent, Maisie gamifies this astute, genre-defying collection with an intricate plexus of symbolism, mysticism, numerology, reference and ritual. Haunting and haunted, Ghost Lives paints an eerily recognisable picture of how it feels to be lonely, or, in other words, to be human. So that's Ghost Lives, Cursed Edition by Alex Maisie on Bad Betty, 28th of March. And then finally, Popular Song by Harry Mann. That's out on Nine Archers Press on the 25th of April. Popular Song makes us tap our feet to the rhythms of nostalgia, life on Mars, science fiction, lyric odyssey, humour, and a fondness for the spirit-catching cassette tape in this highly inventive debut from Harry Mann. So that's five poetry collections to check out.
Amazing.
That sounds great. You chose a track, We Teach Life, and I wondered if you wanted to say something about it before I play it now.
Rafif Ziada, I've known Rafif's work for a while, but obviously I've been listening to it a lot more recently, and I just found that the poetic monologue on this track was incredibly powerful, and even though it was released long before the current situation came out, I just feel like it captures it in a really honest and open way, and I just think it will make people sit up and listen.
Excellent choice.
Yeah, and we've got another poetry based track coming up afterwards, which is another choice of yours.
So yeah,
why did you choose that one?
I'll be talking about it later on. I've recently formed a new organization called Livewire, which has evolved from my Nymphs and Thugs label, and I just wanted to pick something that was released on Nymphs and Thugs that I've not played for a while, and it's just a really beautiful vulnerable lyric from Kevin P. Gilday.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, we can hear all about it once we've heard the track.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks, Matt.
My body was a TV'd massacre. Today, my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits, filled enough with statistics to counter measured response. So I perfected my English. And I learned all my UN resolutions. I perfected my English and I learned all my UN resolutions. But still, he looks me straight in the eyes and asks me, Ms. Ziada, wouldn't everything be resolved if you Palestinians would just stop teaching so much hatred to your children? Pause. I look inside of me for strength to be patient. I look inside of me for strength to be patient. But patience is not at the tip of my tongue as the bombs drop over Gaza. Patience has just escaped me. Pause. Remember to smile. Rafif, you're on camera. Remember to smile. Remember to keep it together. Pause. We teach life, sir. We teach life, sir, after they have occupied the last skies. We teach life, sir, after they have built their settlements and their apartheid walls. After the last skies. We teach life, sir. But today, today my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits. And they need a hook. They tell me every journalist needs a hook. They need a personal story, just a human story. How about you give us a story of a woman from Gaza who needs medication, just medication. Shh, we're not speaking about that word, occupation. Shh, don't mention that word, apartheid, just
medication. How about you give us a story of a woman from Gaza who just needs medication? Maybe she can be pretty. Maybe she can speak English without an accent. Just a human story, a human story. This is not political, you see. How about you? How about you? Do you have enough bone, broken limbs to cover the sun? Hand me over your dead. Hand me over your dead and give me the list of their names, but make sure that it's in 1,200 word limits. Today, my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits. It was made to hook those that are desensitized to terrorist blood, but they felt sorry. They felt sorry for the cattle over Gaza, so I give them statistics and UN resolutions, and I speak their language. I give them statistics and UN resolutions, and I speak their language. We condemn, we deplore, we reject, we condemn, we deplore, we reject. These are not two equal sides, occupier and occupied. These are not two equal sides, colonizer and colonized. And 100 dead, 200 dead, 1,000 dead. I recount, I recount, I recount, and to smile, not terrorist. Remember to smile, not exotic. And I recount, I recount, I recount. 100 dead, 200 dead, 1,000 dead. 100 dead, 200 dead, 1,000 dead. Is anyone out there? Will anyone listen? I wish I could just wail over their bodies. I wish I could just run barefoot in every refugee camp and hold every child, cover their ears so they wouldn't have to hear the sound of bombing for the rest of their life the way that I do. I wish I could just wail over their bodies, run barefoot in every refugee camp and hold every child, cover their ears so they wouldn't have to hear the sound of bombing for the rest of their life the way that I do. 'Cause let me just tell you, there's no soundbite. No matter how good my English gets, no soundbite. No matter how well I practice, no soundbite, no soundbite, no soundbite, no soundbite will bring them back to life, and no soundbite will fix this. We teach life, sir. We teach life, sir. We Palestinians wake up every morning to teach the rest of the world life, sir.
Diver, always close to water. Even in landlocked bliss, anticipating maritime slaughter. Wherever I go, I'm prepared. An oxygen tank on my back. A lot of weight to lug around though, just in case of an attack. Whispering my mantra, please don't drown. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. I'm a deep sea diver. With salt water invading my senses, my feet feel the security of dry land while the waves atrophy my defenses. The brain degrades to murk, I can't see more than an hour ahead. So I strap on my trusty snorkel and dive back into bed. Whispering my mantra, please don't drown, please don't drown, please don't drown, please don't drown. I'm a deep sea diver. I can spend weeks in my iron lung, with no company but detachment and my crucified tongue. Indifferent to promoted emotions, life with the contrast faded out. Sepia tinge, no memories, the exact colour of doubt. Whispering my mantra, please don't drown. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. I'm a deep sea diver. I'm a deep sea cunt, I'm a deep sea fuck, I'm a deep sea failure, I'm a deep sea nothing, I'm a deep sea nothing, I'm a deep sea nothing, I'm a deep sea nothing. With a tank of purified nihilism, immersed in an ocean of solipsism, I limply embrace the endless abyss, sink meekly between the gaping schism. I'm a deep sea diver, ambient pressure begins to build. 790 pounds per square inch,
the most man's ever felt, and still went unfulfilled. I'm a deep sea diver, crystallized by seas of renown. After a lifetime of keeping my head above water, I think this time I'm going to drown.
I love that track.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah, two very contrasting tracks there, really, chosen for very different reasons. But poetry set to music always gets me going a little bit. And I love the vulnerability of Kev's on that last one. I love the way that he frames it with the metaphor of a deep sea diver, but I just love the way he approaches it as well. And then we were all nearly in tears with Rafif's track before then. It just, yeah.
It's just so strong and so clear, such a great track. But I thought they complemented each other very well. Also.
Oh, good.
Yeah. They both felt like a journey, didn't they?
Good picks, good picks.
I don't know how Rafif does that, like, because it's such an incredibly difficult thing to even try and articulate. And as a Palestinian as well, like, I just can't understand how. But it's phenomenal, yeah. Mm.
So you were mentioned earlier about Livewire and about Nymphs and Thugs,
yeah,
and about
we have.
How you were kind of transitioning one venture into the next.
Yeah, we have some new news.
So I basically formed Nymphs and Thugs in 2015 as like a DIY independent spoken word record label, and I always wanted it to be quite punk at its ethos and a bit DIY and self-funded, and I wanted to do albums when I wanted to do albums, and I just sort of had this dream of it being an alternative venture. But then part of me wanted to keep doing events around the country and start offering like writer development, and I just felt like that needed to be a different thing, that needed to be a different organisation. So I've kind of evolved into this new organisation called Livewire, which takes its name from Selena's album, of course. So we started off as a little northern label, and then I saw Selena perform at Rich Mix and took a massive leap of faith and slid into her DMs and was like, can we work together? And that was the catalyst for Nymphs and Thugs becoming like a national organisation, and the album Livewire was the catalyst for all of it. And so we started doing events called Livewire, and so Livewire, the name, has been around for a while, but I kind of felt like I needed to evolve it into a new organisation and keep Nymphs and Thugs as a record label that can just do its own thing, if you know what I mean. So it's not beholden to Arts Council funding, it's not beholden to it, it can just do what it wants. But Livewire is like a professional organisation, so there's three of us who are on a salary and we're just about to take on somebody else to do socials with us, and we can, you know, kind of do it properly, if that makes sense. Not that I wasn't doing it properly with Nymphs and Thugs, but I didn't want it to be bigger than it was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I want it to be in schools and at festivals and working internationally, and so I've just announced that last week. Livewire is this new organization, but I wanted to play something from Nymphs and Thugs just to kind of give it a nod, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Well, congratulations, because I think it's fantastic, having worked with Nymphs and Thugs since 2016. So we've had a real roller coaster, really good fun with it. But I really like to see that it's growing and progressing into, you know, a bigger and bigger a beast. And I love that. So well done, Matt.
I got Arts Council funding at the worst possible time. Thank you, Arts Council.
Make the most of
if
it.
You're listening.
Stretch it out.
It is, yeah.
No, I'm joking. But then why? So it's really interesting to me to think about the different ways in which Livewire is going to work. And so you're going into schools, you're staging events, and you're publishing. Like, what are the different?
So at the moment, the main output is that we've got a night in Weston-super-Mare and a night in Manchester and nights in Leeds, and then gradually every year we're going to add a few more around the whole of the country, including Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland.
How frequent are those?
Like, there'll be four events a year in each town or city.
All right, wonderful. So that's a lot, but then it's like you're really covering the ground.
Yeah. So it'll be Livewire Middlesbrough, Livewire Bristol, Livewire Manchester, Livewire Leeds. Like, it'll be a series of nights around the country. So I just want to contribute to like a national touring network for poets and spoken word artists, because I feel like after COVID the scene's suffering a little bit, but there's amazing people like Loud Poets and Bad Betty, and I just want to be part of that ecosystem that offers opportunities for poets.
And something that I do remember from our show during, well, not just our show, but poetry during COVID, was the fact that we had these great kind of readings, accounts, thoughts, just even sometimes voice notes that people would send in. And they'd send, and you were gathering them from all over the country.
Yeah.
And so we were really getting, and this feedback I got from people listening, where that's like, oh, great, so I can pick up on these kind of ideas and feelings and thoughts at this really kind of crazy time from people of all types all over. And, you know, and it was international. You were getting kind of people sending stuff in from all over the world. And it was just, so it seems like that is something that's really important to you. That
yeah.
representation.
But, well, I think poetry naturally lends itself to like a range of narratives and giving people a voice that might not find a voice in other art forms. And just, I think it just encourages empathy and understanding. Like, and if you want any truth about any situation, listen to the poets. Like, that's just, and in this world of, you know, fake news and overwhelming levels of content on social media and not really knowing what to think about stuff, if you listen to the poets, you kind of cut to the heart of what's happening, I think. And that's just always something I've wanted to do. So as well as the live events, we're also now doing writer development. So at the moment, it's just a series of workshops that are kind of twinned with each live event that we're doing. So Weston-super-Mare, we're doing workshops in Clevedon. Manchester, we're doing workshops in Blackburn, etc., plus some workshops online. But further down the line, I want us to have like a schools programme. We've partnered up with a Roundhouse to do a regional heat for their Roundhouse Poetry Slam, which is 18 to 25 year olds. Much as I hate them for being that young. Like, poetry is giving young people an outlet that they kind of struggle. Like, imagine growing up with social media.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I think poetry is a really valuable thing to have.
Yeah.
So I just want Livewire to be just part of the national conversation when it comes to enabling and providing opportunities and just getting more people into poetry as well. There's some international work further down the line, but none of it's confirmed yet. But yeah, it's exciting.
And where can people find out more, get updates and things?
Livewirepoetry.org. Or at Livewire Poetry on the socials.
All right, and we'll be sharing it, obviously, on our channels as well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well done, Matt. We love this.
Thank you.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. It's really good.
It sounds like something I'd have really wanted between the age of 18 and 25.
I know, yeah, same.
Yeah,
what was I doing?
Yeah. What are we going to do now, Rose?
We're going to have a track. We're going to have some electronic because we've been getting away with it
okay.
all our lives.
Good.
Yeah, we have.
It's been true. talking to myself just to suggest that I'm selfish. I've been trying to impress that more is less and I'm repressed.
I should do it instead.
However I look, it's clear to see I love you more than you love me. However I look, it's clear to see I love you more than
me asking what things you have seen, and you're vulnerable in your head. You're screaming your wail to your dead. Creatures veiled by night, following things that aren't right. And they're tired and they need to be led. Or you're screaming your wail till you're dead. But give me to a rambling man. Let it always be known that I was who I am. We're beaten, battered and cold. My children will live just to grow. But if I sit here and weep, I'll be blown over by the slightest of breeze. And the weak need to be led. And the tender are carried to their bed. I'll be damned if I'll be found there. But give me to a rambling man. Let it always be known that I was who I am. It's funny how the first chords that you come to are the minor notes that come to serenade you. And it's hard to accept yourself as someone you don't desire, as someone you don't want to be.
Hi, and welcome back to Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio.
You're listening to Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio. Matt, if people are listening to the show, where can they find us online?
It's at Roaring Twenties Radio, and the 20s is 20s. We're on Instagram. We're also on X, but you know, Instagram's where it's at, isn't it? And there's a link on there so you can catch all of our previous episodes as podcasts. You should be able to find them wherever you usually listen, but if you're struggling, go on Instagram and find the link on there.
And are we going to have an account on Threads at any point?
I should move us over onto Threads, shouldn't we? We should be on Threads.
Yeah, I quite like Threads.
Okay.
It's so much time on there.
It's very gentle, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's social media.
If you tag us on... we'll be on Threads. By the time you listen to this, we'll be on Threads.
Cool. Yes. Thank you very much, Matt. And now, Amma Rose, please tell us what's been happening in the world of art.
Well, in the world of art, there's some great shows that have opened. There's also been this kind of like slightly bizarre kind of, I don't know, anomalous controversy to do with the ACE and DCMS, all the acronyms. So ACE is Arts Council England. DCMS is the Department of Culture, Sport and Media. I always get it in the wrong order. But there's been a little controversy because there was an announcement that it seemed to be like you may or may not get in trouble for making overtly political statements through your art. If you are funded by the Arts Council, you may or may not lose some or all of your funding, but you might not, but you might. And it was very unspecific. So I think that's kind of on the kind of industry side, that's what everyone's talking about, because number one, it's just quite difficult to understand.
I mean, I actually went on Twitter just to check to see if it was real. Yeah. That's weird, right? But I just saw people were sharing things on Instagram. So I went on Twitter, where I have, you know, a very big family of people that I've been following for over the last decade, to see what everyone was saying about it and see what was going on about it. And it just seemed
a bit dystopian.
Fascist.
Yeah. The worrying thing about it, though, is it was like, if you are an employee of an MPO, the MPO an MPO obviously is an Arts Council organisation, but if an individual does something on your personal profile, that can still have ramifications for the organisation. That was the thing that really worried me.
Well, it's a bit like, you know, if you're a journalist and you interview someone live, you're responsible for what they say.
Yeah.
Mm. So you're the one that gets sued, not the person that said the thing.
Yeah.
Like it's all, like it's your article. It's all under your name. So like that kind of applied.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Like if, for example, I run Livewire and all of our events and everything is completely apolitical, but then I, as Matt Abbott Poet, tweet something about something that is very political, Livewire could lose the funding because I'm part of Livewire.
But I mean, I think the debate was just kicking off on that one, like a couple of hours I did on X, Twitter. It's just everyone saying, well, what is political? What isn't political? Like, how are they going to define that?
This is the thing, and it says overtly political. And I think there's a group in Ireland called NECAP who've been doing a lot of stuff on Irish history. And obviously, you can't really talk about Irish history without talking about the British being, you know, bastards. And so I think they were basically asking for funding to produce stuff that was directly and specifically calling out the British government / empire. And the government were like, hold on, we can't really fund this. But I don't know for definite. I'm not trying to defend it. I'm trying to understand it. Maybe it's stuff like that. But
also, you've just made me think that a lot of the time funding, you have to meet certain criteria, and a lot of those criteria could and could not be considered political. So if you are doing representational work, that's political. If you are, as you say, looking into something historical, it could become political. You don't know what you're going to find out. It just seems quite ill-considered. But sorry, I cut you off there. What were you going
to
say?
I was about to say something very similar, that language of what's historical, what's political, it just seems like a way to... Because think about the average theatre production. It involves so many people and so many people are involved in that. So how do you monitor and who sets the language and who gatekeeps? It just gets messier and messier.
Or it allows people to pick and choose what they do censor, because it's so vague that you could almost go, oh, Sorry, that's not actually within the rules.
Yeah.
For things that just based on whether or not you want them to be made.
You know, like when I was in year six, I was in an environmental group where we planted sunflowers in the school garden. Is that too political now? Because we're talking about climate change.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I saw someone said art without politics is colouring in. And I say, art without politics, you know, poetry without politics is a shopping list.
Don't diss on Frank O'Hara, man. He's got some good stuff.
Enough with the plums.
What is it? In order to write art poetry that's not political, I'd have to listen to the bird song, and to be able to hear the bird song, the bombs would have to stop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or the warplanes, I think it is, sorry.
It just doesn't seem to make any sense, and it's so at odds with the creative history of this country. That's what's so... I mean, there are other places in the world where it's different. People focus on different things. I mean, it's like I really struggle to think of any creative movement that didn't have some kind of political angle to it, or that's not... Do you know, I just can't think of... Well,
we live in a political world. I mean, show me... I mean, if the world was all buttercups and butterflies and everything was kind and peaceful and loving and we didn't actually live like this, then we wouldn't have to write the reality of this. That's the thing. The art comes second. Make the world a safer place with less scary, very scary things going on, and then poets will just lounge around writing lovely, peaceful poems all day long of butterflies and full moons and true love and dancing in the flowers. But because the world isn't like that, we are reflecting, we are the mirror of what is the actual truth and what people are actually living through. And most artists and poets are working class, are outside of, are marginalised, are coming from a place where they're talking about how they've been brought up and the world that they're living in and the world that they hope for.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So now we've covered that, I can tell you about a couple of shows. I'm just going to mention three shows.
There Buttercups are a lot and butterflies, sorry.
Yes. That thing where you just make the butter on the bottom of your chin. But Tate, talking about political art.
Yoko Ono. Kind of
yes. So Yoko Ono's show, Music of the Mind, has opened at Tate, and people didn't know what to think about it. People didn't know what to expect, I think, and for reasons that are glaringly obvious, Yoko Ono hasn't really had a fair shout, despite being actually a very high-profile revolutionary artist when she met her husband. Mm. He was more famous than her, and they start to work together, and there's... I don't think lots of people didn't like what they made together. I don't know. But they were very, very happy. So it's like, so this is kind of like looking at her legacy as on its own and looking at, you know, her different types of art making, from really radical body art, playing with feminism, vulnerability, just really loud antagonistic shouting, which is something that I really associate with her music. And also really wonderful stuff, participatory stuff, stuff that involves the audience, stuff that brings people in that they have to add to. I was talking to somebody that went to see it at the preview and then went a few days later because they had to kind of go back. So they were writing about it and they were like how amazing it was once all the kind of works that require like audience participation had started. It's like you walked into an empty gallery and then a couple of days later you walked into something that was full and there was loads of new work that had already been made through that kind of participatory side of what she did. So I think that is very kind of lovely, and I think everyone should probably go.
How long is it running till?
It is running until...
Have people got time?
It's just opened. I get the feeling it is running until, it's the 1st of September. It's on forever.
Oh, great.
That sounds ace.
So, Leah, I'm definitely going to go there a few times.
And until the 7th of April, so get it while it's hot. Women in Revolt Art and Activism in the UK, 1970 to 1990, is on for just another month or so. And that's at Tate Britain, and that's a really good exhibition that is a kind of looking at feminism in the UK, which is really... You know, who can argue with that? And then another show that I saw last night that was really good is a show called Accordion Fields, which is a group painting show at Lisson Gallery in Lisson Grove. They have two gallery spaces. It's right by Edgware Road Tube, so it's a little off the beaten track, but it's well worth hunting down. It's a beautiful gallery. They always have really interesting shows. And this is just young contemporary painting. And it's just a really beautiful show. And I think if you just want to go and see something very kind of, it's very aesthetic. All art is political, but it is painting, and it's kind of a lot about beauty, surface, creativity. There are lots of young female painters in the show. And I think it's just a really, really nice show of painting. That opened yesterday, and I think it's on for about 3 months. Another show which I thought was really good, which I haven't actually seen, but it's actually curated by Lisa Anderson, and she runs the Black Cultural Archive. She's a very nice woman who I've met a few times, and she's curated a show called Soulscapes at Dulwich Picture Gallery. And she's brought together lots of different artists from the diaspora, but really wonderful artists: Hervin Anderson, Phoebe Boswell, Njeka Akinyili Crosby, Kimathi Donkor, Isaac Julian, Alberta Whittle, Michael Armitage. I mean, it's like some big names there. Mm. But and Dulwich Picture Gallery is a gorgeous gallery, and Lisa Anderson is a kind of lovely, lovely woman, and it's great to see her flex this side of what she does, because I think most of the time she's just focusing on running the BCA. And so, yeah, I highly recommend Soulscapes and checking that out and supporting there. And there's always stuff to see, as I always say. Like, check out commercial galleries, get a bad rep, but they're free and they're open access, if they don't always feel like they are. So if you want to go and see some art and you don't want to spend £25, then you can just go into Fitzrovia, East Castle Street. You can go to Davy Street in Mayfair, or you can go down to the East End, and which is a bit more, okay, that's less straightforward. And you can go and see art for free. And it's a lot of the time museum quality art, and you will be welcome. So, yeah, check out your local commercial gallery or make a day of it. Now, I heard this for the first time yesterday. This song is called Dream of Delphi, and it's apparently a comeback by Bat for Lashes, who I always absolutely loved. And I heard it and I was like, oh, what's that? But I think it's a really lovely song, and I always really liked her as an artist. And I have actually been wondering where she's gone. So this is The Dream of Delphi.
Thank you. guy. An underwater guy who controls the sea. Got killed by 10 million pounds of sludge from New York and New Jersey.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio. Very excited to introduce you to our guest, Tutku Barbaros.
Hi.
Hi, it's lovely to have you here. So I've been reading and loving your collection of short stories, All the Women She Knows. Through 11 triumphant and relatable short stories, Tutku Barbaros explores the magic that comes from truly knowing ourselves. These are women who are discovering their own paths in their own ways and the growing pains and difficult decisions that come with deciding to choose themselves. That's what it says on the cover of the book, but I think it's so much more. I've really been loving this book and
Thank
walking
you.
Around with it in my bag like a friend. I love that when a book's like that. So to give the listeners a little flavour, would you mind giving us a reading? Is that okay?
Of course. This is Dill Was Born on a Saturday Afternoon. Dill was born on a Saturday afternoon in the utility room, on one of those days where the sky is white with clouds, no glimmer of blue, no shard of sun, and only memory of moon. Her big sister, a full 16 years older, looked at the hairy newborn thing before her, then out the window, then back down again, mostly tenderly, but a touch bossily in that way older sisters innately are, and whispered, "Go paint your canvas, baby girl," into Dill's little ear. Their mum always remarks how everything about Dill was a surprise. Dill practically strode out of the room and into our lives a couple of weeks early. And of course, in the room where all the freshly laundered towels were already waiting, like she'd planned it. And of course, on a Saturday, our baby ruled by Saturn, god of sowing seeds. The whole family, a tapestry of mixed Mediterranean ancestry, keenly adore their mythology. And it's true, Dill is a woman of high ambition and Dill is always on a mission. She's currently 33 and on year 3 of a 5-year plan. This means she's the maitre d' of a restaurant in one of those grand and gorgeous London hotels. Dill worked her way up, worked hard and worked patiently until she could swap shifts serving bubble and squeak amidst the grease of her local caff for flutes of bubbly in posh hotels. She loves the hotel, but she hates it too. The bosses and the way the snootier clientele treats her beloved team often leaves her asking, does it have to be like this? One day, when she has her own establishment, she plans to prove that it doesn't. So she turns up, day in, day out, to gain experience. And at least now it's Christmas, so even though she's exhausted, even though her big sister keeps reiterating, babes, you look cream crackered, she cherishes these weeks where people visit less for business and more for pleasure. The hotel guests arrive for a few nights with high hopes of the magic snow globe London they've seen in films, and Dill works hard to meet those expectations. The other punters, the ones here for the office Christmas do's, indulge hard on the company card. Occasionally two, sometimes three, of the office Christmas doers will drunkenly stumble to reception and inquire about the cost of spending the night so they can have a really good time. On hearing the price, they always change their minds and jump into taxis back to their husbands and wives. So Dill always gets in a little earlier, just in case there's anything to catch up on. She's a professional, but her intrigue never ceases to be ignited by how many people choose this hotel to house their infidelities. Last night's team didn't have much to report on, though, which is probably good for Dill's growing cynicism. She heads off to the staff bathrooms to get ready. She slips off the rose quartz bracelets her best friend gave her for protection, because jewellery isn't regulation, and pulls her sleeves over her tattoos, also not regulation. She spritzes his wrists with jasmine scent and lividly pulls on the unflattering pair of black trousers she mistakenly grabbed this morning. They're bobbled between the thighs and, oh, they're flared. She's a tapered leg person. Nonetheless, she still posts a full body selfie with the caption, appalling, appalling 90s boots cut, but are still fantastic. She knows someone will reply saying, girl, who are you first trapping? And she'll reply, absolutely no one, which is true. Men irritate Dill, especially their inability to deliver on what they promise. To Dill, men mean dissatisfaction. But she does get a kick out of a righteous flirt, so why shouldn't she occasionally entertain someone for a while, even if she will inevitably get bored when they can't keep up? She's learnt to stop striking up banter with random men in front of her mother, though, who will excitedly query, oh, he seemed nice, did you get his number? As she envisions grandchildren playing in the heathers. Dill always bats her enthusiasm away. No real chemistry, no actual connection. I'd rather win alone than let some man attempt to run rings around me, Mum. Of course, wise words from her little Saturn baby. Her mum always feels the conflict between being terrified Dill might end up alone and extremely impressed by the fact Dill is completely fine with that. Currently, Dill sucks a mint and assesses the 5 p.m. vibe with her wide, wide eyes. She's happy to see espresso martinis effusively toasted. She'd fought hard and fast to have them included in the Christmas menu, a naughty drizzle of Baileys to make them extra seasonal. As Dill reminds each waitress to tuck in shirts and smooth skirts, memories of school uniform check days always shoot through her mind. Once a week, she'd stand in her blazer that her much taller sister had passed down to her and brace herself for whatever creative ridicule the prefects would surely hurl. She won't leave anyone feeling inadequate on her watch now, so she's a force in how she protects her team from the judgment of not just the staff's superiors, but the superiority that typifies the clientele. Dill makes sure everyone is pristine. Her love is sometimes tough, but it's genuine and it's definitely appreciated. Daily ritual is the few minutes she spends with the chefs at the gleaming open kitchen, which forms the centrepiece of the space. She loves to admire their expertise, arms moving at the speed of light. Tonight's special is gnocchi. The certainty of food prep relaxes Dill. Throw potato into water and it will boil. No surprises. Before she can sink into that thought, Dill feels a frantic tap on her shoulder. Dill, we need to do a swap. The head barman has called in sick, and seeing as Dill is the only one around who can mix a cocktail as well as him, it was her that taught him, she now needs to replace him. At least no one will see my crap trousers, she thinks. And anyway, she has missed being on the bar. At least the bar faces the rest of the restaurant, so she can still keep an eye, she tells herself as she crosses her fingers and wishes them all a good night. Once she's checked all the ingredients are stocked and ready to go, Dill drops her elbows on the bar and watches the enormous Christmas decorations as they gleam. Fir tree garlands festoon the ceiling, woven through with differently sized red and gold baubles. Fairy lights adorning everything. It's enchanting, but somehow still tasteful. It glows. Just as she's making a mental note to email the designer with praise in the morning, a man comes in. confident as anything, and all the eyes in Dill stop to look at him.
Into dust.
Welcome back to Roaring Twenties Radio. A little bit of Mazzy Star there as we just digest and process and have a little think about things. I'm in the studio here with...
Amarose Abrams.
And Matt Abbott.
Totko Barbaros.
And you just gave us a beautiful reading, Toots, and I really loved it. Can you tell us a little bit more about how it came to be that you gathered these amazing stories, this short story collection?
Oh, it was just like these women were just sort of knocking at my door every day, turning up and saying, you know, write me. It's so character-led from start to end, and they all sort of exist continuously in my mind. So there were just all these details and thoughts and these just wonderful women that are among us. Ordinary, extraordinary, those words are so limiting, but I just really wanted to play with that and enjoy these women and meet these women and then introduce them to everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, your writing's just so evocative and just it's just so enjoyable, and you are actually there visiting, you know, having a little nose around someone else's, you know, life. And I just really love the way you've captured the characters. It's just, it's a real skill to do that.
Thank you.
To put the reader into someone's life like that. Can you tell me, tell us some more. So who are Dear Damsels? That's who's publishing this.
Dear Damsels are my publishers, and they are a writing platform, sort of been building a community for a good few years now. They started out that they would set, I think it was monthly writing prompt, and people would just respond to these prompts, and then they'd collate them in a writing newsletter that you'd get on every Sunday afternoon. And it was really nice, like you'd get essays and poetry and different pieces, and it really spoke for how much one simple prompt can sort of set so many different synapses going in different writers' minds. And that was it. I sort of started responding to the prompts, and over years we developed more of a relationship. And when the opportunity came to put forward a single author collection, I was right there. And at the moment they run a writing hour on Sunday mornings and stuff like that, just bringing writers together.
And you very much bring a lot of your heritage and your family. Your mum is a hairdresser.
Mum is a hairdresser.
So
yeah.
To tell the listeners a little bit about that, I love this.
So my mum is a hairdresser in Southeast London. I work part time in this salon too. So hair has always been sort of a big part of my world, which I'm sure you've got because I'm always describing everyone's hairstyles. Salons are a really great space because you talk about everything in a hair salon, and you have to be quite good at talking about everything, whether it's reality telly, what happened in whatever last night, or people really talking about their personal stories, and people come in and transition and have haircuts because they've broken up or haircuts because of this. And it's just a really beautiful space to meet lots of people in. And it's been very sort of embedded in my life.
So that's where you picked up a lot of these stories?
Some of, not all of them. Quite a lot of...
Some of them.
Especially like the characters, yeah.
Yeah, because that reminds me very much of beautiful Inua Ellums doing his with the barbers.
Yeah, Barbershop Chronicles.
Yeah. And that's what I really loved about this. I mean, I love loads of layers of this, but this idea of when you sit in the hairdressing chair. I mean, as I said, you know, when I first met you this morning, I was like, my hair's dark, is it all right? You know, it's like, I can't, you know, I've been blonde for the last decade and it feels very strange. Hair is so personal, and the way we talk in a hairdressing chair,
and also it changes all the time, especially for women. Like, you go through so many different hormonal changes and bodily changes, and all of that stuff impacts your hair every single phase of your life, and it's quite interesting as a visual marker of change sometimes.
So you wrote this collection of short stories. Can you tell me a little bit about your writing journey? Like, when did you kind of get into writing, and are you like me? Were you really into books and things as a kid?
100%. I was always a reader, always a writer. I used to line up all my teddy bears and dollies in a row at night and then read them my school reading each night. Maybe like perform was in the making as well. So I've always been really passionate about reading and writing, and actually I remember being really, really young and writing a story, and it must have been like year three or year four, and the teacher called me up and was like, right, you need to go to the headmistress's office. And I was convinced that I'd got in trouble, which I think maybe says a lot about me, but actually I got praised. And I think that's kind of been something that's always stayed in my mind, that as a woman writing, you always think, am I going to get in trouble, or are people going to love this? And you're always treading that boundary, and I felt like that since I was seven. So,
you know, me too, I constantly think I'm about to get in trouble. I live my life preparing for a bollocking.
And sometimes you are about to get in trouble.
100%.
Yeah. Or sometimes you're about to get praised and then I just burst into tears.
Well, usually it's
because I'm so relieved I'm not getting a bollocking.
Or sometimes it's a tasty mixture of both. Like, you do want to upset some people sometimes, don't you? So
yeah,
that's true.
Too true. Too true. Too true. So what else can we ask you? I was going to ask you, so in these like fractured and divided times, What are you working on now? How are you finding the hope and the inspiration to keep going, to keep picking up the pen? How are you feeling?
Well, so this just came out, so this has been like a big source of light for me. But I think
it just came out this week, right?
Yeah, last Thursday, so she's a week old. And how am I keeping the hope? I think just constantly looking for it and making sure that I'm keeping my eyes open to it. And I think, you know, a question that people always ask is, who are your heroes? And my heroes genuinely are and will always be the dinner lady that's keeping extra food back for the kids that she knows that can't afford it, the person that's giving you small change in the queue. Like, those people are my heroes, those acts of kindness. And as long as you can hold on to any of that, that is how you hold any faith. Because I think everything operates at an interpersonal level. I think sometimes in these fractured times, it's very easy to be so focused on the absolute, like, abject lack of hope that you just forget it can even exist. And hope takes work. It's hard work, and it takes community values. And I think books especially are a form of community, especially like in the run up to this. I found myself sort of getting deep into the Fred's Bookstagram community, and it's just people just trying to reach out together over the books they love. And I think actually, as long as you can keep putting out acts of love in the form of literature or poetry or reading or writing, you're creating community all the time. And I think as long as we can hear each other and we feel that we can hear each other, then there is always hope.
What a beautiful answer.
Oh.
I love that. I love that. I'm just gonna keep playing that and keep playing the recording of that answer. What a lovely
answer.
Have it
as your ringtone.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I knew I loved you. Just what a beautiful answer. Okay. And so yeah, because I was gonna go heroes, and yeah, so heroes everyday.
Everyday heroes.
Yeah.
I meet them 100 times a week and I'm so privileged.
Helplessly hoping her harlequin hovers nearby, awaiting a word, gasping at glimpses of gentle true spirit. He runs, wishing he could fly, only to trip at the sound of goodbye. Wordlessly watching, he waits by the window and wonders at the empty place inside. Heartlessly helping himself to her bad dreams, he worries, did he hear a goodbye? Or even hello? They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are for each other. Stand by the stairway, you'll see something certain to tell you. Confusion has its cause. Love isn't lying, it's loose in a lady who lingers, saying she is lost and choking on hello. They are one person, they are two alone, they are three together, they are four each other.
To take a little break there. We had a little lightning, thunder and lightning, very, very frightening. Just played a little bit of Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. I play that song a lot at the moment. I keep changing the words to "we are one person, we are two true hearts, we are free together, we are for each other." They aren't the correct words, but try them on. Okay, going back to Toots and our amazing interview with Toots and her amazing short stories. What are you working on now? How's writing going now? What's coming next?
What's coming next? I feel ready to dig deeper into a novel. So I'm just kind of playing around. Sort of, I feel like I've been moving the furniture around in my mind for the last year. So I'm just kind of having a little look, unpacking some boxes. So, yeah, still having a feel around some things at the moment.
Good, good, good.
Vague answer, but yeah.
No, but I really love your writing style. I feel it, yeah, it's just beautiful. Where did you learn to write like that? How did you pick up this? It's a very unique style. It's very, very much pulls you in. It's a real craft you've got there.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. I think maybe it's a byproduct of growing up in a household where there were quite a few languages flying around. And I think there's something about, so at home we speak Turkish and English, Turkish Cypriot. And there's just ways that you lilt in and out of different languages. And sometimes language finds a limit. And you're like, actually, I need to say this in Turkish for it to make sense. Or I need to say this in English for it to make sense. And when I, over time, started to translate that into other ways of writing, like actually what visual is going to finish this idea off for me, or what track can I think of, or what are they eating, or what are they drinking. And I think maybe that's a bit of my theatre background as well, because there's sort of those stage directions seeping in all the time as well.
Yeah, so tell me about that, your theatre background.
So I did drama and English lit at uni many years ago, so I was always kind of treading both worlds of literature and theatre, and always been really passionate about theatre as well. And just loved writing dialogue. And I think there's such interesting possibilities in each different medium in a way that I've found myself kind of swimming in and out of them in different pieces. And I quite like that. I think each story has its own medium.
Yeah, that's what it was like. Each story felt like a little movie. They were very filmic to me, mm-hmm. very visual, and I really loved that. So what else can I ask you? I was going to ask you, are there any hidden meanings or hidden messages in your work?
Well, if I tell them now, they won't be hidden anymore.
I nearly tricked it out of you.
I think the hidden thing for me is always... I think reading can be a conversation between author and writer always. And I wanted to give the reader opportunity to use their own imagination as much as they wanted to and as much as they can. So sometimes there are symbolic things that I say about different characters, but and especially in relation to like what their class might be or what their ethnicity might be. But I wanted to just drop treasure little clues and like those details about things that happen at a wedding or things that happen at a funeral. And I just wanted to leave those little clues of it being like, hey, guess what? They're mostly kids of immigrants. And just kind of using like just little drops of things for people to find their own way into it.
Yeah, I loved that.
Thank you.
I did sort of notice that. Are there short stories or any short story writers that you really love? Have you got a favourite short story writer?
Oh, I don't know if I've got a favourite short story writer.
I love short stories. I'm always on the lookout.
The Secret Lives of Church Ladies. Did you read that?
No, what's that?
It's good. It's it looks at different sort of different sections of different church communities in Black America, and it goes into different stories of different women, and some of them sort of queer love stories, and some of them they're quite sexy, and they just kind of dip into lots of different possibilities that you might experience. And there's one in that called How to Make Love to a Physicist that I thought was a great story, really memorable.
Title on its own is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Spectacular.
It's really great. It's really powerful and interesting. Yeah, that's one. And also, it's not a short story collection at all, but a piece that really stuck with me, a book that really stuck with me this year was I'm a Fan by Sheena Patel, because there's just something about that emulating the Instagram style writing and the flawed characters. I love a flawed character.
It's almost like a horror story, that book.
Yeah. You read it like really compulsively as well, as though you're like doom scrolling Instagram, which I just thought was so clever to sort of recreate that.
Yeah.
Really good book.
Scary. Yeah.
And then what have you got coming up? Do you have any like anything where people can come and find
Oh, I should have said as well, actually, this is always a surprise, but I'm a real non-fiction babe as well. Like, I love non-fiction so much. Like, one of my favourites is Natives by Akala, which I know you like Audible, because I've heard you talk about it before, and that is a great one that I would always recommend, because it's just hearing him for 10 hours is just a wonderful
So tell
wonderful
me thing. The name and the title again.
Natives by Akala.
Oh, yeah. I think that's on my list.
It's a great Audible. And the other Audible that I love is Miriam Margoyles' autobiography.
Oh, she's so amazing. Funny. She's reading it, right?
She's reading it, and it's literally like...
I love
her. I've been listening to it, no joke, for like a year, because I don't want it to end. Yeah. And it feels like I'm regularly having coffees with this woman. So I would say that, yeah, that's been really a great read. Anything I've got coming up. So I lead a creative writing workshop last Sunday of the month in Forest Hill, where it's for adults that just want to play around, and we blow bubbles and eat sweets and drink cocktails and have cake and write. It's basically like my dream afternoon made manifest.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's wonderful. Where can people find out more about that?
Probably my Instagram. Yeah.
Okay.
Instagram is where I post most of my stuff.
All right,
what is your Instagram?
It's my name. It's TUTKU_Barbaros, BARBAROS.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Toots. Fantastic.
Pleasure.
Oh, and the book is called All the Women She Knows, and it's out now with Dear Damsels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deadlines, rules and regulations, and fuck all these smartphone machines, and fuck this company fishing gas car thing I've been driving, and fuck the pinger with his rotten hickey breath, and fuck this cheap cologne on my neck and stupid beard I've been riding, and fuck it all, motherfucker, I'm going straight to the hotspot, yep. Fuck all these brown envelopes sliding underneath my door, and fuck these goddamn things in my head, and fuck that guy at the gym that won't start looking at me when I kiss. Kids on the sidewalk that laugh at me when I fall over, and fuck that old lady that gives me that fucking stink eye, man. Fuck that little stupid dog with a furry collar, man. Fuck it all, motherfucker, I'm going straight to the hot spot, woo! Just calm down, settle down, it's okay. It's okay, we all been there. Do your thing, man, it's okay. Them's the rules, bud, break them all. Just do your thing, man, have a ball. We'll be right back.
to get myself on the toilet here. Her daddy got drunk and he wanted to kill. If she don't love me, then nobody will. It's one for the Jacks and two for the sea. Two for the sea. Paradise is paradise, she all alone. Got to get myself on the top of that hill. Her daddy got drunk and decided to kill. If she don't love me, then nobody will. It's one for the Jacks and two for the sea.
It's Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio. I'm here in the studio with
Matt Abbott.
And I'm Rose.
Talk with Barbaros.
And it's a lovely little bit of Soho, lovely little bit of February, lovely little bit of nearly spring. And it's time for me to be doing my book section. Ask me what books I'm recommending.
What books have you got to recommend this month, Selena?
Okay, so I've got some nice books and some nice events I'd like to share with you. I'm not going to go into great deep dive this in this show. I'm just going to give you seven titles that I think you're going to really enjoy, and that are imminently here with us. Of course, obviously, Toot's book, All the Women She Knows, which is out now with Dear Damsels. And then also, I noticed that Max Porter, his paperback of his book Shy is out now. So go and look for that. It's got a beautiful green cover. So if you couldn't get the hardback, the paperback is out. It just came out yesterday. My highlight of my month, or since I last made this show, was as you all know, I've been buried in editing, making three books at the same time this winter, so haven't been going out and about much. How does that feel? It's a little bit like riding three horses at the same time, kind of standing on the horses' saddles and holding three sets of reins. It's been very insane trying to do three books at once. I wouldn't recommend it. But anyway, I did go out once, and I went to see Joelle Taylor speaking at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on South Bank, and it was just so replenishing and nourishing and inspiring and beautiful and excellent. So I really want you, number one, to go and order her debut novel. That's Joelle Taylor, super poet. Go and order her novel and go and check out the live shows that she's doing. They're just such, it's so beautiful the way that she's reading this work, the way it's been directed and made, just so wonderful. And it's just so exciting, exciting to see what she's doing with her work, with her life, with her soul, with her generous soul. I'm hoping that we can get Joelle on the show. She would have been with us today, but she's already on that tour. But hopefully she'll be with us in March. So it's Joelle Taylor, The Night Alphabet. Top Doll is out now with Karen McCarthy Wolfe. There's a fantastic event, actually, that I need you to go to, which is next Friday. I don't know where it is, but I want you to go and look it up. Look up Top Doll, Karen McCarthy Wolf. She's doing a show next Friday with Roger Robinson and Malaika Booker, and it looks amazing. I believe, I wish I could tell you where it was. I didn't write it down. I just wrote, go to this. But look, go to Karen McCarthy Wolf's Instagram, and you'll see all the information there. In the post box this week, we got the new one from Monique Roffey, Passion Tide. The Proofs Are Arriving, a new novel from Monique. I'm looking forward to reading that and sharing that with you, and hopefully getting her in it as a guest. Last month, I was raving about All Fours by Miranda July. It's out in May. The pre-order is happening. I mean, she doesn't need help from me on this show, but I really bloody loved it. It really was an exciting, brilliant, brilliant read. Miranda July, All Fours, out in May on Canongate. And then also a book that I couldn't put down that actually blew my little mind is Shemaine Suleiman, and her book The Chain is out next month, guys. It's
friend
next month.
Friend of the show, Shemaine.
Friend of the show, Shemaine. So hopefully my dream is that we get Shemaine and Joelle Taylor into next, because they've both got these really powerful books out. And obviously we're all mates, and obviously it'd be really fun to go to the pub with us all together after. You know, come on, we've got to do
watch out the pub.
Yeah, watch out all pubs in Soho. So Shemaine Suleiman's The Chain is coming out next month. I've talked about it a couple of times on this show. Go get it, check it out. It's just phenomenal, powerful, empowering, as well as powerful, honest memoir. I'm going to get to really, really fight for that, actually. I'm going to see if I can get both her and Joelle in for the March show. And then, you know, thumbs up to Benjamin Myers, A Cuddie. I highly recommend that. I really enjoyed it, and it's just doing phenomenally well, and I really, really enjoyed it. I did that one on Audible as an audiobook, where you get the lovely accents and the storytelling that, and I really loved it as an audiobook. Okay, now, I'm going to tell you about some really phenomenally exciting gigs I've got coming up in March. On March the 8th, it's International Women's Day, and I'm doing one night live in London. International Women's Day, wow, at Shoreditch Town Hall in London. I'm honoured to support the very brilliant Annabel Hirsch and her glorious book, The History of Women in 101 Objects. Come and check it out. It's the launch of the audiobook. I'm not allowed to tell you much more at this point, but look out for it. It's 101 women, right, reading an object each. I'm just one woman. I'm just one of 101. So you go and check out who else they've gathered for this. It's nuts. It's funny as hell. It's brilliant. I'm so excited to be part of this party. It's a really, really good audiobook. All the voices, all the women, and of course it's for charity. And it will all go to Refuge UK and to the WOW charity. So it's all for a good cause. If you want to come and have a little peek of that live on stage, that's Shoreditch Town Hall on International Women's Day. On March the 15th, I'm with Holly McNish at the Hackney Empire. I believe there's maybe 2 seats left. She's pretty much sold out the Hackney Empire for poetry. That's phenomenal. I'm so proud to just be a small part of that. But it's not about me. It's Holly. She's just got such pulling. I don't know. It's amazing. But she's got this massive, great big Hackney Empire. She's completely packed it out. Me and Michael Pedersen are the support. Hackney Empire. March the 15th. What more can I say? Holly McNish reading from Lobster. It's going to be amazing. I'm very excited to support Holly alongside Michael. It's going to be a brilliant event and a real treat to see both of them. I love them too, so that's going to be gorgeous. On March the 18th, Strange Things at the Social. I'm delighted to join White Rabbit to celebrate the launch of the brilliant Richard Norris memoir. Richard Norris is in conversation with me, Selena Godden, plus special guest Harry Sword, the Soft Bouncers, and the Hardway Brothers. And that's all at the Social here in London. And then on March the 23rd, last one, March the 23rd, National Portrait Gallery. I've been asked to read some poetry in response to photographers Francesca Woodman and Julia Margaret Cameron. They're two of the most influential women in the history of photography. Woo! They lived a century apart, Cameron working in the UK and Sri Lanka from the 1860s and Woodman in America and Italy from the 1970s. Both women explored portraiture beyond its ability to record appearance, using their own creativity and imagination to suggest notions of beauty, symbolism, transformation and storytelling. Join award-winning author, poet and broadcaster Selena Godden, that's me, for a poetry performance in the galleries, drawing on magical realism and the notion of dream space, themes explored within the upcoming exhibition. I'll be reading from a selection of works and sharing possibly some of my new poems from my new collection With Love, Grief and Fury, which we published in May. Therein ends my book talk.
Thank you. Now we have Come and Get Your Love.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I'm strange.
Flowers growing on a hill, dragonflies and daffodils learn from us very much. Look at us, but do
when the day is done, lay me down to rest. Everyone will see that I loved you the best. When all is said and done, it's simple and it's plain. And if I had the chance, I'd do it all again. But I can't get close to you, come undone. Scared of the dark, though you tangle and tease me by worse than your bark. You said you'd never leave me. The devil may care, but he don't please believe me. Oh, love of my life, won't you let me down easy? I'm done. Come undone. Come undone. Babe, come undone. Undone. Come undone. Come undone. Bam, I come undone.
Tuned into Roaring Twenties Radio on Soho Radio. We're coming to the end of our show now. We're coming to the end of February. We're entering spring, a new season, a new time, a new era, a new you, a new me, and a new Threads page.
So come on, Matt,
tell our listeners how they can find us on Threads.
At Roaring Twenties Radio, 20s is 20s. Or if you go on our Instagram profile, you just press the little squiggle and it takes you straight over.
And you did that during the show.
Yep.
That is just how amazing you are, isn't it? Isn't
he? Exactly.
Clever?
He's technological genius. Whiz kid.
He is.
Well, I am the youth. I am the youth.
A long sigh happening. But that's been our show for February. I don't know if anyone's got any events or projects they want to kind of go over before we sign off.
I'd like to say a very warm thank you to Toots for coming and joining us and reading for us and sharing your beautiful short stories. I look forward to seeing what you write next, and I will be telling everyone about this book.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
If you are a small child, you can apply for the Roundhouse Poetry Slam by 9 a.m. on the 1st of March. If you're 18 to 25, there are slams at the Roundhouse in London as well as in Leeds, Liverpool and Bristol. So please apply. Anyone in the UK can apply. It's free.
Oh, talking about short stories, the BBC Short Story Award is next month. I think the deadline for that is either March 15th or March 18th. But if you win that, you get 15 grand.
What?
That's a nice bunch of money, isn't it?
Yeah.
Short story. Maybe you could send one of your short stories in.
Yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah.
I'd do with 15K.
Yeah, wow. We could all do with 15K. I mean, whew, that's a nice holiday.
Yeah. Well, the next episode is on the 24th of March.
Oh, is it?
No, 23rd of March. 23rd of March, sorry.
23rd of March. Okay.
All right, wonderful. Well, I really look forward to that. And thanks for tuning in, everyone. Find us at Roaring20s.
And shout out to the charities.
Everywhere.
Shout out to the charities that we always
shout out about. So Médecins Sans Frontières or Medical Aid Palestine, same charity, I think.
Yeah, shout out to Refugee Community Kitchen, Feeding People Without Judgment. Find them on Instagram, Twitter, find them everywhere. Feeding People Without Judgment.
Choose Love, Centrepoint, Shelter.
Bayega Odabanjo Foundation.
Yes, of course.
That's
the newly
still linked
launched
on ours. Yeah. Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, wonderful. And and signing off with our custom made, most beautiful theme tune.
Made by my lovely Dickie.
Yes. So here, see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.